Right now it is time to get the lowdown on everything that's going on in South County and surrounding areas. The BerkshireEdge.com is the website, and we are joined every week at this time by David and Marcy from the Berkshire Edge. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Well, good morning. Good morning. Good morning. That's good news from Chris Weld.
I tell you what, you know, it's hard to believe he's been around 15 years. I mean,
I know. I remember when he just started.
Seemed like yesterday, as a matter of fact. Oh, well.
Can't we say that about so many things?
I know, but geez, 15 years. Well, then I look at myself. I've been doing this for 51 years, and it seems like just yesterday
God.
I started.
We've been doing the Edge for 7.5 years, so. Jeez.
Yeah.
And look at how much free time you have.
That's right. That's right. None.
That's right. Well, let's
and not only none, minus.
Yeah, that's right. Let's take a look at some of the stories that we've picked out for this week. We'll start off with the Berkshire Hills Regional School District borrowing $1.5 million to study reconstruction of the Monument Mountain Regional High School.
Yes, this is a long-awaited project.
saga
to upgrade the high school, and it's been a slog administratively and politically to get this project going, but the high school needs an upgrade, and so they're finally, it looks like, the school committee has voted to do it,
or to at least study it.
And but you know, the only thing is that you have to get in line for these projects with the Massachusetts School Building Authority. So it's not going to happen like tomorrow.
You know, it always amazes me. I know school budgets are things of contention, but when you have a physical plant that you are sending children to learn and invest in their future and possibly go on to college or careers, you would think that you would want to have, at whatever cost it has to be. I mean, we go through it here at Region 1, the best possible facility available for those students to work in.
This would be like the top priority of everybody, would think to me.
It's very complicated. I mean, you know, as we've discussed this before, it's very complicated because the cost of running the schools is divided among three different communities: West Stockbridge, Stockbridge, and Great Barrington. Great Barrington has the majority of the students, so it has to pay the majority of the money to run the school district. I think when this came up before, there was a lot of misinformation, and people in Great Barrington were tax-weary, and so they voted not to accept the state money. And the other problem is that we have a lot of second home owners who don't have kids who go to the schools, and so they don't vote, but still, I mean, there are a lot of older people in the area who don't have kids, and so it's not as crucial to them as it is to people, you know, who still have children in the school system. So there are a number of reasons why it failed, but in the and that was 2014. So in the, you know, in the 7 years since that failed, the school has really deteriorated. You know,
there are roof leaks.
There are buckets in the hallways or trash cans in the hallways collecting water, and it doesn't have the wiring that's required for, you know, modern day computers. And the school was built in the 1950s or 60s, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's old, and it is serious. So, you know, hopefully apparently we can apply again to the state for some relief. And
well, the School Building Authority has invited the district to apply.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So that, you know, we have another chance 7 or 8 years later.
But not only does the school district have to put, I mean, the Massachusetts School Building Authority have to put us in the queue, but voters have to approve it in three towns. And because it's a union, because it's a multiple-town school district, and so all three towns have to approve it.
Great Barrington is the most crucial because Great Barrington pays the largest percentage of the whatever costs we're going to have to come up with to match the state, you know, the state's contribution. That's the problem. The state only gives part of it. Local communities have to give a, you know, the major share, and that's what Great Barrington voted down in 2014.
Yeah.
All right, we'll move on to your next story, and that is your Sheila Clary has got a online interview with the New York Times Supreme Court reporter discussing the book Justice on the Brink.
Yes.
Oh, well, yeah. Sheila's good. Well, Sheila's father's a lawyer, and so she's a really smart woman.
Well, we have, you know, the Edge is largely supported by Edge members. I mean, not readers, but people who, even though they, you know, just like in public radio, we have asked our readers who can be reading us for free to help support us. Because we can't continue without reader support, and this is the second of a series of members-only webinars that we're offering. We did a very interesting one a few months ago with a group called Patriotic Millionaires, who were, you know, very wealthy people who are campaigning for tax reform. Because they feel that the tax system right now fosters inequality, which is destabilizing for the country. Now, this is the second of our members-only webinars, and this is going to be an interview with Linda Greenhouse, who is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, longtime New York Times Supreme Court reporter, and now Yale Law School lecturer. She's a graduate of Yale Law School. And she has a fascinating new book out about the Supreme Court, just up to the point where Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, and it seemed clear that the division of the court, or the allocation between liberals and conservatives, was about to change. So this should be Linda's a terrific speaker, and she's very knowledgeable. And I must say that we have had terrific response from our members. We sent out an email the other day asking people whether they wanted to attend, and the response has been overwhelming. So it's going to be a very lively and interesting conversation. And I urge people to join the Edge as a member and join us for this conversation with Linda Greenhouse.
So it's called Justice on the Brink.
Yes, and forgive, I mean, this is obviously a little pledge drive on behalf of the Berkshire Edge, but it's important for us to continue, as I'm sure you understand, Marshall.
Well, just take away any local information that can be put out by you, by us, by other, and people will be totally in the dark. Governments could be as transparent as they want, but if there's no way to get the transparent message out, transparency does no good.
And you know, in the Edge, in its 7 years, has become it's become a vital part of the community. And we really,
just as the radio is.
As the radio is, right. I mean, and so it's if people don't support it, it won't be here.
Yeah.
So we are trying to make it enticing in addition to our, you know, our daily output of interesting stories. We are trying to entice people to join. So this is another effort.
All right, I want to move on to the next
story
because I read it on your website, and I was shocked because out here one thing that we really need and depend on, especially people of older age, is and people who are lower income, public transportation. And when I read the story that the Berkshire Regional Transportation Authority is proposing cuts in service by almost 50%.
Can you imagine?
That is a staggering story.
Right.
Well, it's outrageous. But, you know, public transportation is a poor stepchild of our society, you know. You'd think that it would be something that we would willingly support, but we don't. But here in the rural area, it's really important to get people who otherwise can't get around to appointments and events and so on and so forth. So we have this, we have a Berkshire Regional Transit Authority, which has these little buses that are, you know, serve a population of people that otherwise can't navigate the rural area.
You can't get around without a car.
Right.
Well, there are some public meetings where people can.
Yep.
I mean, we're having there's one tomorrow night at 6. What day was this? This is March 15th, so it's tonight.
Yep.
There's one tonight at 6:30 p.m. and another one Friday at 1:30 p.m. and some in-person meetings are going to be held in Pittsfield next week. So, people go to our story on the ad, we have a link to information about the proposed cuts and also instructions for joining these meetings remotely and for submitting public comments. So they are saying that low readership was cited as the reason for the changes, but I would think that if they could do a little bit more promotion, they could have more. I'm sorry, I did say low readership and low ridership.
Right.
I think that's a question of promotion, not of eliminating the vehicles.
Well, promotion and maybe come out 1 week a month where you have discounted rides. I mean, to build everything up. I mean, because
right.
Like here we have like Gear has it and Sharon Healthcare has it, and we have over in New York State they have a Dial-A-Ride program,
right.
but that's you know that doesn't handle. A large population that lives out in a rural area and mm-hmm. at any one time might need to get to a doctor or to a store or whatever. It's a,
right.
It's an important part of the fabric to keep people living in the community they live in.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's
right.
True.
And, you know, maybe they should examine their schedules. You know, it may be that the schedule is inadequate rather than the fact that, I mean, that may be the explanation for low ridership.
Well, I think they should also become more more visible, just to let people know that they're there, you know.
That you're right, on a daily basis. Out of sight, out of mind.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, and also, like I said, every once in a while, it happens in retail, and now it happens in you throw your customer a bone. You give them like a week worth of 50% off or whatever it is, 25% off, and sooner or later, you do that enough, you'll bump up the numbers because you know it's an important program. It's going to be interesting to see who shows up at the meetings and who speaks at the meetings.
Yes,
yeah, will be.
Yes, and I hope they do.
Now, your next story, you are welcoming in the Berkshires refugees already.
Yes. Well, I think you are also.
Yes.
This is a very interesting story by Hannah Van Sickle, one of our regular writers, about the Jewish Family Service is now welcoming 25 Afghan refugees into Berkshire County.
Yep. And... since we're experiencing displaced peoples around the world these days, this is a crucial outreach.
Right.
Yeah. Anyways, it's really. Go ahead, Marcy.
No, I was just going to say that the Jewish Family Service tried to support Syrian resettlement efforts here in the Berkshires to Syrian families, but they were prevented by the Trump administration, which wouldn't allow Syrian refugees into the country. But now, I mean, they are using the same efforts to welcome 25 Afghan refugees, and it's very exciting. I mean, it's they need homes, they need contacts, they need jobs. You know, it's and so we'll see. I mean, I know that there are the same effort is going on in Litchfield County because my sister who lives there is very active in it. And I know what the people in, you know, in Litchfield County are going through to find homes and furniture and translators, and we're doing the same thing in Berkshire County now. So, you know, hopefully they will, these Afghan people will be comfortable here and will be able to build a life.
Yeah.
But they, you know, the organization has found residences for them, and it's a drop in the bucket for the number of people from Afghanistan who need help. But still, I mean, if you're doing it in Litchfield County and we're doing it in Berkshire County, I can only hope that this is being done all over the country.
Well, and you just take a look to Europe, what Poland is going through, welcoming in millions,
millions
of refugees. And who knows how long this flow of refugees there is going to last, simply because that war is not going to end anytime soon unless something really unbelievable happens. It's going to be a long-term fight like happened in Afghanistan. And there'll be more refugees on the world stage that have no places to go. I mean, it's great that we do it here in our local communities, but one of those things that needs to be put together, and people have to realize people don't want to leave their homeland. They don't.
Nobody wants
to leave their homeland. The people that come up from South America and into our, nobody wants to leave their homeland. For them to want to leave their homeland,
it's circumstances that make it necessary.
And this is a necessary. This is very necessary.
Well, I mean, you know, the whole country, our whole country was
founded.
Founded that way. That's right. And we populated the continent that way.
All right.
Now we have this. You know, I'm here. You know, pull up the drawbridge. You know, let the moat become active again.
My father came in from Russia. Okay.
Yes.
So there we go.
Yes,
all right.
Your father came from Russia?
From Russia. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
My
grandparents came from the Ukraine.
Yeah.
Which was then called the Ukraine.
Yes.
Ukraine.
You know, we are all somehow imported into this country one way or another. Except for the people that we basically pushed out of the country, which were the American Indians. But we'll leave that story for another matter. I want to go to your final story because we have about 3 minutes left. And this is a nice proposal by the U.S. Senate panel to name a federal fellowship program after that Sheffield native who passed away in that crash of the Ethiopian Airlines plane.
Oh, yes, Samia Stumo, right.
She was a lovely young woman.
Yeah. We just and she was, you know, constantly going overseas and in these missions to help people, and it was just tragic that she, what a lovely young person, you know.
And her parents live in Sheffield, and she's also the niece of Ralph Nader, so it was a family of activists, you know, and who were extremely vocal, about the safety of these airlines when she, you know, after she was killed.
Well, you know, there's a great documentary on Netflix. I forget the name of it, and I watched it about Boeing and that 737 MAX 8.
And what did it say?
Well, basically what it said was that the company covered up stuff that pilots didn't know about, and then when the pilots did find out about it, what it turned out to be was if you couldn't correct what happened in 10 seconds, no matter what you did after 10 seconds, it was a lost cause. And when you used to think about Boeing, and Boeing always was the standard of excellence in the air. If you flew a Boeing plane, you knew you were safe. And for those two crashes that happened within, I think, 5 weeks of one another, the lives they claimed, every air crash is a horrible claim of life. But when it's totally avoidable, not the fault of plane failure or pilot failure, that makes it even more horrible.
Right. Yeah, it was designed.
Yeah.
Design failure. Well, engineering failure.
Well, it's something that people should, if they have Netflix, look for that documentary on Boeing.
Before you get on another plane.
Well, they've got it all fixed now, but it's way too late. And
Right.
How about a good note?
And the poor pilots. Boeing sent their pilots and their flight crews up in these planes that were dangerous.
Yeah.
And the pilots didn't survive either.
No.
Yeah.
Well, one piece of good news. I'm going to give you one piece of good news to wrap us up, and it's a bipartisan piece of good news. Republicans and Democrats in the Senate unanimously approved the resolution, the Sunshine Act, to end daylight savings time and to just keep it like this all year round.
I mean, to end standard time.
Yeah. So keep it. They'll just keep it.
Yeah. Now, I saw that, and I was very surprised because I remember, and I don't know.
Well, Ed Markey was the one that came up with the idea.
Really?
Yeah.
But I thought the problem was that it was very dark in the morning and children were going to school in the dark, and that's why they needed to go back to standard time for the winter.
Well, now it just has to get through the House. Ha, 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 ha. So what happens there. But for me, I wake up in the dark. And I'd much rather have more time at the end of the day.
To do things. The long afternoon.
Yeah.
And so
to me, it'll be a great thing if it happens. But again,
I agree. It will be a great thing. My mood elevates.
That's the Sunday
daylight savings time goes into.
Well, I think the agricultural states are probably where people object to this, you know, because farmers are getting up at 4 in the morning to plow their fields and they don't want to be in the dark.
Well, everybody knows, and it's a proven fact, sunlight is good for your energy and sunlight is good for your emotions.
Yeah,
it's a proven fact, so I'm all in favor of it. Well, with that being said, we're on the sunny side of the street.
And you know what? We're offering sunlight to people.
That's exactly right.
All right, guys, we'll speak to you next week.
Okay.
Bye.
Take care.
Okay, Marshall.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The Berkshire Edge on air. Of course, you can find the Berkshire Edge at theberkshireedge.com on the web.